It's Wednesday, June 3rd, 2009, and you're listening to episode 150 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 56 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's Pat.
My name's John.
My name is Chris. Hi, John.
Hi, Chris. Good to be back. I'm done with my first year of law school, so hello, Fear the Boot.
And you're with us until, what, mid-August?
Just about, yeah. I think I go back August 15th, so or thereabouts.
And you are coming with us to Gen Con, right?
Oh, yes.
So anyone looking at their Johnny G fix, you've got about, what, 3 months, I guess? So
yeah, buddy.
Before
what weekend is this? The 7th and 9th or whatever? Or is it the last one in July?
No, it's like the 14th or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, all that orientation I can skip anyway, so... Oh, wait, we can't say bad words on Fear the Boot.
We can?
I'll be at Gen Con.
Yeah, actually, Pat, we say words on Fear the Boot, so once you get over that hump, then we'll worry about potty mouth.
So as of this episode, we are kicking off...
Was that a little... jerk.
Yeah, it was.
There was a big old F-U on Pat's eyes there for all of our listeners who are using the radio format, the TV
use
version.
Use that fire.
Oh.
Build that fire up, that inner anger.
I will.
Yeah. You'll just sit there and smoke.
So, Dan, I noticed you have a copy of Star Trek Force Commander sitting underneath your microphone.
Oh, that's been sitting there for...
John, watched the new Star Trek movie and enjoyed it, I kind of want to borrow that.
No, you don't.
That's been the white elephant in the room. That's been like this thing Dan put there.
I trust you, Chad, because you have a copy of Daikatana on your pegboard at home or whatever.
This is... I think someone gave me this game. I couldn't even tell you when. It is a terrible game because basically...
It's better than Daikatana.
The way it plays, it's a Star Trek game where... As it says, you're a bridge commander. Basically, you have a crew around you, I think four officers, and they'll like warp into a system, and they have little drop-down menus of the things you can tell them to do, except the options are really limited, it's very hands-off, and the plot's not all that deep.
Okay.
So, while it has some pretty cool graphics, that's really about the extent of it. Other than that, this game is really boring. It's an RPG-esque or command level sort of format.
Yeah. And that's the basic problem with the Star Trek games is you can do one of two things, or at least I've seen one of two things done. One is you make it an arcade dogfighter with the USS Enterprise.
Right.
That's wrong.
Crew of hundreds and hundreds of people doing a trench run.
You make it this super high level command thing wherein you make a few decisions and then the ship beneath you moves itself as it would.
I'm curious.
And you're removed from it.
I'm curious now. I wonder how many fanfic, not if, I wonder how many fanfics there are out there of the USS Enterprise doing a trench run on the Star Destroyer.
You mean the Death Star,
I'm sorry.
I don't know, and I don't really care to find out.
But you know,
I'm really curious.
Playing a video game from the command perspective wouldn't bother me if it was detailed enough and there was sufficient enough RP where you actually felt like that's what you're doing.
So basically, go start a guild in an MMO and try to do something that takes coordination to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. In this, it's not that detailed.
Like, not that there's much of that left, but...
The menus are very shallow. You just pick the most vague things of, like, scan the area.
It's fight or run, and then it works. That's stupid.
It's very shallow. You know, the best Star Trek video game I played was the 25th anniversary game. I don't know if anyone here played it.
Don't know that one.
It was actually an adventure-style game. It was a combination action-adventure game. You had some action stuff where you would do like ship-to-ship fighting, but most of it was an adventure-style game, like, you know, King's Quest where
you didn't get lives, you got red shirts.
Where it would play out like you had maybe half a dozen different episodes, like episodes of the TV show, where you'd get a transmission or warp into a system and something be going on. And per the TV show, it was kind of like it's a sci-fi mystery. And you would beam down to the planet and you could interact with objects and talk to people and you try and do things. And there were some where you beamed down to planets and some where people would try and take over your ship. And
did you find any aliens to fall in love with when you beamed down to the planets?
I hope so.
No.
You didn't play Kirk, did you?
I wouldn't play.
No, you actually did.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, if you didn't, if you weren't nailing green Betazoids, it's Kirk.
If there isn't a lesbian alien scene, then you know, I'm just not interested in the game because that should be the selling point of an entire game.
That's why I have a copy of Mass Effect right over here.
Oh, that game is nothing but trouble.
It has. Yeah. Two lesbian alien sex scenes in it.
Hand it over.
Though you only get to one of them if you play a bad guy, but the other one you can get either way.
Do those lesbian aliens only fall
for
bad boys?
That's what she said.
That is so immature.
Well, it's not that they only fall for bad boys. It's that only a bad boy will demand sex from this one chick.
Oh, so it's...
But she gives it up.
Surprise sex.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
But she's
kind of hot, I guess.
You know what we call surprise sex?
Depends on the state.
Yeah.
So,
Chris,
now that we just
it.
Lost,
I love those awkward pauses after. I'm going to make an inappropriate sexual comment. Pause.
Well, it's like a game of poker. The ante is being upped with every new comment, and eventually we all just chicken out.
Yeah.
As of this episode, as we mentioned last show, today we are starting the Power 16-2. The leagues have been set. The stage has been set. An epic struggle is unfolding before us.
Bum, bum, bum.
Let's read off the teams here, and then I'm going to tell you guys how you can vote and how we're going to handle this. So first off, Don Shadowrun is back with the Shadowrun League, though he is only managing. And in his stable, some of these are from last time. Some of them are new players. Mm-hmm. Some of them are turncoats that left the defunct Rifts League in an attempt to save their careers. So we have...
Did anybody go from the Shadowrun League and jump over to this new league?
Oh, yes. The Denny's really? League? Oh,
wow.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's gone several directions here. So we have...
Where's Ric Flair?
We have in the Shadowrun
the Baron
League...
killed him. Baron... In the offseason.
Ahem.
Baron... I'm talking about the Baron killing Ric Flair here. Which
is
more
Captain,
important?
I'm in love with my voice. Let him talk.
Whoa. That's enough
smarm
from you, sir.
Look at the Mr. Sass over there. I love it.
Pat puts one on the board. Pump, pump.
Johnny G's a good influence on me.
That's right. I bolster you.
So, first off, on the Shadowrun League, we have Baron Von Badass, Bill Cosby, Earthshaker, Phytor, BJ's Liquo Store, the FTB Furry, Fat Beards, and Bella Sarah.
I don't think I've been on the mic since I ran Earthshaker at Fear the Con. Never run Earthshaker. It's an absolutely terrible game.
Well, that's why. And I'm going to tell you here about the first matchups and how I picked them here in a second. But on the second group in the Denny's League, we have Batman, Unicron, Capital Ships, the Dark Lord of Denny's himself, the manager of the league, the Battlemaster, the Plotwagon, Julie Hussey, and Stanley L. Jackson. Now, what we have to do is, of course, before we can have that final fight between the two leagues, we have to pick a winner within the leagues. So this week, what we're going to do is we're going to do the first round of voting within the Shadowrun League to see who goes on to the next round. And then next week, we'll do the same thing for the Denny's League. So this week, here's our matchups. First off, we have Baron Von Badass versus Earthshaker.
Man, you're just pulling it right out.
It is a...
you're not even leading into this, are you?
Oh, no.
Just going total epic
it's
win.
It's a poorly designed NPC versus a poorly designed adventure.
No, it's wonderness versus
to be entirely fair, Earthshaker is himself both an NPC and an adventure.
We
and
have
a dungeon.
Bill Cosby versus BJ's Liquo. It's like a social problem versus the other one.
It's a total after-school special is what it is.
We have Phytor versus the Fatbeard. This is like an internal struggle.
No kidding.
This is like man versus himself.
Yes.
And then last of all, because we want to pair up sexually ambiguous things, we have Bella Sarah versus the FTB mascot Furry.
Wow. I'm just not sure who to pull for in that match.
I hope Dr. Clifford Huxtable finds those two so we can poke under the rear and find out.
So, if you care about this, which I know you do, go out to feartheboot.com, check the show notes. There will be a link there to the voting booth. And also, by the way, we are adding a contest into this because we have something like $130 in gift cards from Catalyst Games.
Yes.
So what we are going to do is when you go out there and place your vote, we're going to have a blank where you can enter your email address. We are not going to use it for anything else. We are not going to start a mailing list.
I am.
We're not going to sell the list. We're not going to give the list away. The only thing we're using it for is to identify you, after which we will delete it. So privacy policy here is pretty rock solid. But if you enter your email address, what we will do is at the end of the competition, every email address that's entered, we will basically take, do a random drawing, and we'll do like three or four of them, and we'll have a first, second, and third place, and we'll give away different dollar amounts in gift cards to Catalyst Games, so you can get Classic BattleTech or the newer editions of Shadowrun or whatever product they have that interests you. And like I said, we're not going to use this for anything but this drawing, after which we're deleting the list. And also, just FYI, we will only allow you to enter an email address once per bracket. So if you
this
come
isn't
back,
the Annie's.
If you
we made that joke last week.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Damn it.
But if you come back for each bracket, you can get entered multiple times. But if you vote multiple times on the same bracket, that's not going to help you. Mm-hmm. So this week, we're going to see who
what
makes
if you
it.
Spoof IP addresses?
That's not going to help
or,
you.
Or spoof email addresses.
Yeah. I have no way of knowing. I'm not going to chase you down. So.
I think that you should pound your fist vehemently and just, you know, threaten to throw people out. Nah, okay, I'll stop there.
Okay.
They dropped the classic on BattleTech, you know.
Did they just really?
Just like Coke. Yeah, they just recently dropped the classic. So now it's just back to BattleTech. Just BattleTech.
Just like New Coke, they dropped MechWarrior Dark Ages as the bad idea was.
Yes.
Dark Ages is gone? Like dead and gone?
Oh, yeah. That's dead and gone.
The timeline is still intact.
Oh, well, that's kind
of... Well, it's not part of BattleTech, is it? I mean, the Clicks game is kind of its own little failed, disgusting thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the Clicks game is the Clicks game, but it is my understanding, the timeline-wise, that all of those events, I believe, are still going to occur. But,
I mean, if we play in 3025 or whatever, we can just say
well,
that,
yeah, well, of course,
that's
just like
in the future
you know,
that never happens.
The heck you want, yeah. But.
Well, because there's unicorns in my game.
The year that BattleTech is in right now is like 3076-ish, roughly, and so we've still got a good 30-odd years to go before you get into the Dark Ages business.
Huh. All right, anyway. Chad, you wanted to talk about aliens and movies and TV shows, what works and what doesn't.
Actually, I just wanted to bitch about Star Trek aliens.
Okay,
how
well,
stupid they are.
Go ahead and bitch about Star Trek aliens.
Let's ask a question first before I get into my bitching. What is a good alien to you guys? What makes a good alien?
A dead alien.
Other than a dead alien, what makes a good alien?
I would say two things.
Face-hugging and chest-bursting.
Ooh, good answer.
One is they are both genuinely diverse. You do not have one race-wide stereotype.
What if they're a collective, like the aliens?
I'll come back to that.
Okay, because I like that.
And two, they're not humanoid, or don't necessarily have to be humanoid.
See, that's my biggest bitch about the Star Trek aliens, is that...
Well, they fail on both accounts.
Yeah. Chad, it's 1968. How are we going to have aliens except for painting our faces?
Believe me, okay. I used to watch old Doctor Who and Blake 7. I understand the limitations of old sci-fi, is that, you know... DESI
does not have the money for us to do CGI.
Well, and even then, you put a guy in a rubber suit, it looks like a guy in a rubber suit. I mean, I think...
A Gorn.
Yeah, the Gorn is about the absolute ceiling of, you know, believable aliens and stuff. Although that... what was that Magna monster that they had? They shot the Magna monster, and it ate guys, and then they... Bones were... repaired it with like plaster of Paris.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, what was that alien called?
I don't remember what it was called, but yeah, I know the episode
was kind of cute.
Well, and okay, yeah, it was. Because
it looks spongy and soft, even though it was supposed to be like Rocky and Bernie. But...
Right, and I guess you just kind of drag along the floor with ropes. Well, I don't know how they did
anyway, it. Anyway, I think they had a couple of guys laying there inside. I really enjoyed those kind of aliens from the old stuff, but I mean, in our day and age, I think it's just laziness on the special effects department when you have an alien that is a human, and the only thing that's different about him is elf ears or bumpy nose.
Well, you know, there is a theory among astronomer, biologists, whatever, that the configuration of the humanoid body is so favorable to the carriage and survival and reproduction of an intelligent species that any aliens we find will more or less look like us. I don't know if I believe that or not. But
yeah,
it's
it
been
seems
presented.
A little sort of human-centric to me. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I have a question then for you, Chad. Because first of all, I'm going to say, Chad, by the way, for this episode, I'm going to do my best to absolutely and utterly agree with everything that you say.
Wow. thank you for throwing me that bone.
You're welcome. But now my question to you is, so looking at this from the practical standpoint, do you think then it would be better to just not have an alien unless you can afford the special effects to create something that is not fit what you just described in regards to a TV show? Is it better to just pass that budget and then just have them be humans or, you know, or to what?
I have a very strong opinion on this, but it is for a different reason. I think that if you can't get a decent-looking alien, then I don't think you should do it. But my reason for that has nothing to do with how aliens look. It has to do with the state of sci-fi movies. Sci-fi movies, for the most part, by and large, are horror slasher flicks. A human crew gets ripped apart by an alien monster, or some variation thereof. And aliens stop becoming interesting alien beings that you're interacting with, like, say, an alien nation or V or
demons, like, you know, in Event Horizon.
Yeah, or anything else like that. But then they turn into they're monsters. And I would rather have a really good, solid science fiction TV show, movie, whatever, that takes place in the future. It could be in space, could be or whatever, that doesn't have a single alien in it. And so
your problem is mostly, you think it's cheap for a plot to say the monster is coming.
Yeah,
we're gonna run. And we're gonna, you know, that's
and
kind
those,
of a,
you know what? Those movies are fine, but yeah, there's 10 billion of them out there, yeah, and most of
and
them
you
are
really don't
video.
Even need science fiction to do that. I agree with you.
I will say the two complaints I gave: the humanoid appearance is the lesser of the two. That if I watch a movie or a TV series or play a video game,
it's not a deal breaker for me.
Where
I mean, I used
they're
to watch
humanoid.
Star Trek.
Yeah, I understand that for budget reasons, you've got to just take someone and give them a funny nose and funny ears. I understand even in video games, because of the way that character animation and modeling works, that sometimes even in those, it's really difficult to create something that's not humanoid in build.
Right.
So I understand the limitations. I wish they wouldn't do it, but I understand why. My bigger complaint is that they don't bother writing them. That, yeah, like you said, Chad, either they're just mindless monsters, or you take one archetype from human society, apply that to the entirety of an alien species, and there's your aliens.
Mm-hmm.
That's always bugged me.
That is Star Trek TOS's main sin. Vulcans are cerebral. Klingons are violent.
You know, they even do that with humans. Look at the Battlestar Galactica reimaging, especially if you watch Caprica, the new one. Everybody's human, and they have totally different separate societies.
Yeah,
that are completely divided by planets.
In the first season of BSG, back when it was, you know, good and hard sci-fi, they played that up a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there were people from different planets, and one of them was rich and one was poor and one was atheistic and one was religious.
If you are from this planet, you are like this. And I mean, when you, I hate to get into dangerous territory to say that maybe sort of kind of you could say that when you go down to a country level, maybe even a city or neighborhood level, you can start saying that as generally people are kind of like this.
Yeah.
But even, you know what? That's even not true.
That's not,
I mean,
you're right.
You go to France and there's tons of different kind of people in France. You go to Germany, there's tons of different kind of people in Germany. So that doesn't even apply within our own world.
Well, I think the bigger question is, how homogeneous are these planets?
Yeah.
Like,
why are
on BSG, I don't remember the name of the planet, the one Baltar was from, it's a farm planet.
Right.
The whole planet is farmers and that's it.
Taurons are Hispanic mafia style gangsters. The whole freaking planet is Hispanic mafia style gangsters.
See, but what you're doing though is you're looking at it from our perspective where we have one planet. We have Earth. That's
it. And that's what I'm asking.
If we exist in this multiverse where there are hundreds of planets for humanity to be on,
is it conceivable that the economies of scale would make the farm planet the only way to go?
Travel, and you can easily travel between them.
Yeah. You know
why wouldn't you think that a dynasty would go and take over a planet?
I think that's absolutely true, because
South Central.
When you look at history, look at the 13 colonies and stuff. Look at Pittsburgh. You had people who were of a similar racial background, similar language, similar religion, similar thoughts and ideas, and many times similar families, and they all got on a boat and they all came over to one spot and they built a city. And, you know, they built the cities in different philosophy, the colonies in different philosophies. But even then, even over time, in the 200 years that America's been around, look how much that's changed. 200 years is nothing in the course of history.
That's true.
And look how much it's changed, and look how much things have grown. Especially if you have that free, open, immediate travel like you're talking about, and you're not
a completely liberal, completely decentralized society, which most idealistic sci-fi anyway likes to put forward.
Yeah, you know, you have trade and you have travel, unless it's some sort of weird cult or ideology or something that has taken over a planet and whatever. You know, some
a
extreme
40K type universe where it goes to shit as soon as we get out the door.
Right.
Wah, wah, wah.
So, yeah, I think that there would be travel and trade and the exchange of ideas, and there would be more of a melting pot. But you know what? Maybe I say that because I live in the center of America, which is the epitome of the melting pot. So, you know, maybe my views are biased on this.
No, it's a good question. We've sort of diverged from what makes a good space alien. But
you know what? I think this is more interesting than what makes a good space alien. If within the next 50 years, we suddenly have space travel, and space travel is cheap, and it's efficient, and it's available, and it's fast, and we start colonizing planets, and I'm talking like terraforming and domes, and we find that one or two that's idyllic, and we are frontiersmen, what would it be like? Would it be like America? Only on a sort of a galactic scale. Would it be like the frontier?
There's some good old hard sci-fi that tasks this stuff. Yeah. I know you've read The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Yes.
I love it. But Heinlein poses that question with his Moon Society. And his answer is, it's the Fear of the Boot forums. It's a sausage fest. When you look at places like Alaska and, you know, fishing islands and these places where you have to go far out of your way on grand adventure, they're full of crazy young dudes, and that's what his moon colony's full
in, of. In his other book, Time Enough for Love, which is an absolutely terrible book, by the way, please don't read it. There's a couple of chapters in there where he's like, the Lazarus Long is like, you know, I got to get out of here. You know, there's too much city, too much craziness. They're demanding too many laws and stuff. I'm heading out to the frontier. So instead of just going out there and being a hermit, because he knows that would suck, he decides to put together a colony. And he's like, we're going to go to this habitable, uninhabited planet, and we're going to start a colony, and we're going to build it up from nothing. And he lands there, and one of the theories he puts forward is, are you going to have tons of robots and flying cars and teleporters and all this sort of crap? No, of course not. You can only bring a limited amount of supplies with you. You can't repair any of that high-tech crap, and there's no back and forth. There's no, like, if you're just establishing a colony, even if you have cheap space travel, you're not doing quick back and forth travel all the time. There's nothing to trade yet. There's no colony. There's no reason for ships to keep going back and forth. So all this high-tech flying cars and laser beams and stuff, you can't repair it. It breaks down real easy. So they were literally using wagons and building the town from what was there and establishing a population and aware, and they brought seeds with them, and they had a first winter, and they had to like defend the granary because everyone wanted to eat grain and stuff that they had stored up to plant. And, you know, they had to say, well, some of you are going to die of starvation, because if we eat this now, next winter, everybody's dead because we can't plant anything. And it, you know, it was an interesting, but, and even in within that town built up, they had him as mayor and he couldn't stand it. So he even frontiered on the frontier planet.
Heinlein always does that. Yeah. The very end of Moon is, well, we made our libertarian paradise, but then they made laws. So I'm moving again. I'm going to Mars now.
Yeah.
But that's another good thing. I like to explore that in science fiction. The regression of technology as you travel.
Right.
Like Alpha Centauri, which I think easily has the best plot of any turn-based strategy game. It might be the only TBS game that has a plot. They land on Alpha Centauri, the ship blows up, and they don't have space travel anymore. That was their one spaceship, and it's gone. So it takes them another couple centuries, even with their existing technology, to get it back.
I was looked at as an economic issue, though. Like, for example, within Danvers, the way that I pictured it is, within these empires, a corporation, which, of course, scale's going way up here. So, I mean, these corporations, you know, may stretch planets, would basically say, look, we're going to start a colony on this planet because we look at this planet, we look at it, it's got these minerals, these this much arable land. I don't like the idea of the ice world, the factory world. So, you know, but they look at a planet, say, here's what we can do with it. And
well, if a planet has absolutely no purpose, like it has nothing except two minerals you really need, whether you like to write about that in sci-fi or not, suddenly that world is now a mining planet.
Well, right. Yeah. And I recognize there are exceptions to that on uninhabitable worlds.
Sure.
Those you just strip mine for the ores and you get out of there. But I'm talking about within like half, sidetrack. I don't want to get down. But my point being that these corporations then would come along to the government and basically would buy development rights. They would say, okay, we're going to put a colony there. Obviously, you can always find discontent people that will want to go there for whatever.
Or prisoners,
or people looking to escape persecution, or even just people where dad just lost his job, we've got no money, but they'll pay us to be colonists. And so you pick up, you go out there, and these corporations might sponsor this colony for a long time. That, you know, they will bring people there, they'll build cities there, they'll build a basic infrastructure, and in return, they might have some ability to form its local government. They might have even kind of like the way copyright works in today's law, where you might have exclusive rights to all the profit that planet makes for the next century or something. And that's how in the long term they make their money. And so you don't have people starting with wagons. There is a regular convoy rather coming and going from this planet because a corporation is sponsoring it. And so dumping these people there with wooden wagons is no use to them. And so a supply ship does show up every week or every month or something and keeps that stuff going and starts them at the existent technology level and keeps that going, because in return for that investment, the government's going to give them some kind of governmental power, a taxing power, or profit rights, or land rights, or something, which they're going to get a return on their investment of in the long term.
How do you guys feel about private ownership of planets, then?
I don't have a problem with it.
Only for future Marlon Brando.
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, if you think about the idea of private land ownership, the only reason to us it'd be abhorrent is because we only have one planet.
Right.
True.
But if you had 2,500 inhabitable worlds, what's the big deal with letting somebody own one of them? It's kind of the same thing. You know, I own...
I wish we would have talked about this in property instead of easements.
We should bring it up.
And the rule against perpetuities. Dude, I got cut off in the middle of a property discussion that wrapped around the weekend by a car wreck. I got rear-ended twice in like the last 6 months, and the second time was
Middle of a fight. You being rear-ended is sort of a theme.
Yeah, no, I hate having a new rear ending to report every time I get on these microphones, but it's happened.
Yep.
The second one wasn't that bad. The first one put my car in the shop for a month and a half.
Well, you always remember your first one.
Yeah.
It always leaves a mark, leaves an impact.
Yeah, the second one was much less harsh.
Yeah.
Didn't bump as much.
That's what I've always heard.
Did you leave skid marks?
Do you find you whistle when you run backwards?
There were some repairs to be done.
Oh, sure.
I couldn't take it back out again for another couple weeks.
Totally.
If it falls suit, you won't even feel the third one.
Yeah.
I hope not.
Yeah. The third one's going to be a light tap.
So you do have to worry because gas may start leaking by that point.
Oh, we're not talking.
True.
We didn't hit my exhaust pipe. We just hit my rear bumper.
Gotcha.
No, Chris. I don't even know what that's alluding to. I don't think I want to.
I don't either.
Chris, you dirty old man.
Well, then, of course, by the third one, it's like those times when you have a bottle of pop that's half full and you blow on the top, you know, to make that whoo sound, you know, that's like.
Oh, okay. So you mean like it doesn't even fill the whole thing. There's like air whooshing. Okay, I get it.
Let's get to role-playing games.
I thought that was normal.
Got a couple things we can go over today, and I think we're going to be able to cover both of them. If not, well, then, hey, I already know what we're doing for 151.
So we have 30 minutes of banter crap behind us? Wow.
Well, actually, the past couple episodes have been pretty long. They've all been like over an hour 15. So I don't feel too bad about that.
Chad, time flies when you and I dominate the microphones and ignore them all.
I'm telling you, John, you and I can get a couple of beers in us and just kick it and talk about space politics.
That's right. All right, Dan, what are you talking about?
First thing we're talking about is modifying player characters mid-game. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. I am talking about in the middle of a game, middle of a campaign, you change a character in a way that drastically alters the nature of the character, the power level of the character, or the dynamic of the group. Okay, I'm not talking about minor or cosmetic changes that are hardly worth any concern. So if you want to say I have blonde hair instead of brown, I don't care. If you want to say, hey, look, I put 5 skill points in this skill, it would actually, I misunderstood the skills. It should be over here and you want to move that. That's between you and the GM. Don't care. That's not what we're talking about.
That's between you and the GM's ability not to see you write a 5 on your sheet where once there was a 1.
That's what we talked about an episode or two ago. But what we are talking about is, for example, let's say you're playing a game and you're playing a guy who's really violent and you say, you know what? I'm kind of going through a bad period of my life. I'd really rather not be playing a guy who's this over the top. Don't want to roll up a new character, but I just kind of want to tone him down. And maybe for some reason, because obviously the answer we'd normally give is, look, do it over the course of a couple games, find a way to redeem him. But let's say for some reason you want to do it instantly. Or maybe you realize that, wait a minute, I'm just not enjoying this type of character, so I want to change something.
You can always have an incident happen. I mean, people do insane turnabouts in their every manner of behavior and or worldview when bad or good things or certain things that are maybe good and bad happen to them.
Well, let's,
your violent guy shoots up a room too much, kills all the bad guys, but takes out a 5-year-old along with him. He throws away his gun.
You know, and I completely agree with you.
You ever seen In Bruges?
No.
Sorry. That's the plot of In Bruges.
Oh, wow.
Good stuff. Great movie, by the way. Fantastic movie.
I completely agree with you that the generally speaking, the best way to handle these is life-changing incidents. But before we get into how best to handle them, I want to talk about some of the reasons you might need to do this and then get into some of the problems that can result from doing it. So one of them that I already mentioned is you want to remove a problematic background or personality element. This background or personality element could be problematic for one of two reasons. One, it's disturbing the player. The player wrote something up. It's not turning out the way they thought it would. It's not playing out the way they thought it would. It's disturbing them. It's upsetting other people at the table. There's something about this that's going wrong. It's just not fitting the game. I created a character who's like this, but the game master's running is actually like that. So for some reason, you need to change a background or personality element, but in doing so, would completely rewrite the character that you are playing. The second two, well, examples 2 and 3 are actually both fairly related. One is picking up a new character advantage or perk. Now, sometimes this can happen naturally in the course of a game, or even its appearance doesn't need any explanation. For example, I gained a new sword fighting trick. Okay, no big deal. You just picked that up in the last fight. Who cares? But it could be something like, let's say you're playing Battletech, and midway through the game, you want to pick up a noble title or a land grant. Something that...
Hey, you get mail, right?
Something that...
You've won a baronship.
Your dad died. Now you're the baron. Congrats. Next.
The second or third one, but part two of that one, is buying off a disadvantage. Okay, for example, when you were creating the character, you took the disadvantage of you're missing a limb. And now all of a sudden in the middle of the game, you decide you don't like playing a guy with one arm anymore. And so you're going to go visit the cyber doc, or you've got enough gold pieces to go to the cleric and get a...
If the damn cyber doc there was there for the entirety of this guy's life.
Right.
Why is he only going now?
Yeah.
Well, good question. I'm just trying to throw out some examples. Right. If you got examples or better examples, by all means, I'm just trying
I'm conversing with you. I'm not trying to take a poop on your hypo.
These were just as I was thinking through this and outlining the show. These were some of the examples I came up with where I have seen people midway through a game want to change their character. I think the biggest one of the ones I mentioned is actually the first, that someone decides midway through the character they're playing either just isn't enjoyable or is not working in the plot. The character's useless to the plot for some reason.
Okay, anyway, so why did this happen? Who didn't see the fact that the Nazi and the Jew communist were in the party and now they're not going to get along?
Well, you know, I think what happens in that particular situation, I think that you're sitting down and you're doing your character creation and then suddenly you look at this and like, hey, this will be awesome. This will be so great. But as soon as the rubber hits the road, theoretically, it doesn't work. You realize, and communist Jew are really not going to get along. And the comic hijinks we thought would ensue clearly are not ensuing and something's got to change.
I see that happen in MMOs and MUDs a lot. Inevitably, somebody will roll up a deaf character or a blind character.
Or a mute.
Or whatever. Yeah, and it'll be awesome. All the attention will be on them for a day.
Yeah.
And then Everyone will get sick of them, and they will get sick of their handicap, and the character will either suddenly talk or be gone.
Well, I think that getting back to the role-playing aspect of it, like you said, we'll go Nazi and communist. Okay. The socialist and the communist are in the party together, and they can't get along. Then
the nationals.
Anyway, they don't get along, and people are getting really annoyed, and the players who are playing them are getting really annoyed. They don't want to play that anymore. Well, to me, that's something that should have been fixed before the problem even started.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is I really believe in everybody creating characters at the same time at the same table. I think that avoids a lot of it. Instead of someone coming in and saying, guess what? I'm playing a Third Reich Nazi in our superhero game, in our World War II superhero game. And somebody else comes running in and goes, that's cool. I'm playing a Jewish guy who escaped from Auschwitz and I have magnetic powers. Oh, wait.
First off, that's Magneto.
Yeah.
Second off, you guys should have talked about this before you
red
started
flag.
The game. Yeah.
No problem.
3-yard penalty.
Red flag.
Now, I completely.
Magneto's not a commie, is he?
What?
Magneto's not a commie.
No, but he's talking about playing a communist, and then Chad said red flag. Never mind. All right. I completely agree with what you're saying, that this problem should not occur, and if you want to keep it from occurring, typically the best three things you can do to avoid this is, one, at the start of the game, the GM should express carefully what this game's going to be like, or ask the players, what is this game going to be like? But those expectations should be set. The second is the group template. I mean, that's, if there is nothing else, Fear the Boot leaves as a legacy to the gaming world. May it be the group template.
Yeah. Nah, we use it every game, right, Dan?
And then third is...
I actually made my players use it.
Really?
Yeah, it worked.
And then third is adjust along the way. If you realize in the first game, wait a minute, these two characters aren't gelling, or there's something about this character's background that's kind of bugging me, deal with it before it's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, in the real world we live in, that doesn't always happen. And sometimes you end up 5 or 10 games in, and you've got a compounded problem. Because now you've got a character who's an integral part of the group.
The game is off the ground.
The game is off the ground. There are events, character development, plot points that have all occurred because of elements in your background and personality, but you need to get rid of them all of a sudden. And for all the planning and all things you should have done, you didn't do it, or they didn't go as well as they should have. And this has now happened. And now you're sitting in there 10 games in. You just got done avenging your father's death, but now you've decided that you're really tired of playing an orphan.
Mm-hmm.
And or whatever, and that's, you know,
Batman's never tired.
Yeah, this is a ridiculous example, but you get my point of there might be plot points, developments, whatever, that are tied to these things that suddenly you need to change or want to change. And I sketched out here a list, at least what I came up with, of problems that these types of mid-game changes can cause. And that was one of those extensive changes to history, like I just described, so I won't re-describe it. One of the other ones is changes in power. And that's a lesser one, but like if you work off a disadvantage or something like that, there might be a sudden change in your power level. But a bigger one is changes to the group template. If you sat down and did do your due diligence and decided that this is a group of four guys that would work really well together, and for some reason the relationship of that group hinges on a particular quirk of your character, but now you're sick of playing that quirk. You guys are all friends because this one guy brought them together because he was part of a secret society, but you really don't want to play that anymore for some reason. And now all of a sudden the group basically comes completely unwoven because of something you need to change.
To pick on that particular example that you're using to describe a broader point, which is totally valid. Yeah, you had the guy who was part of the secret society who brought the group together, and now he doesn't want to play that character anymore, and now that character dies or leaves or betrays them or does whatever. Isn't that interesting role-playing, though? It's not about, well, he's gone, we can't be together anymore. No! Your characters aren't deep enough if that's the case. Isn't it interesting to play that out? The aftermath of how that happened. How the group would change. How the dynamics of the group would change. While you're still on this adventure. While this story is still going on. To me, play that out.
Exactly.
These people have a common goal.
Right. At this point, the example you give is that we're off the ground. We're 10 games in. So it's not like all of a sudden you're just dumping this and there's no other background.
Joe died and I'm only here for Joe.
Developed some sort of relationship at this point.
Yeah.
So there will be some.
If Joe dies and you're only there for Joe, and then you're like, I can't play my character anymore with you guys because Joe's not here. Lame.
All these are extreme cases. And I think that's one too, because I don't think you're ever, well, hardly ever going to have an instance where four people are together just because of this one little quirk of the one guy. And, you know, some of the other examples you gave, I don't know. I think if it gets to be too extreme, like the orphan thing, you decide all of a sudden, I don't want to be an orphan. I want my parents to be alive. You know what? Just roll up a new character. I mean, if you're going to change that much, just even if you want to play the same basic kind of character, but he just wants to have parents, just do a new character or something. I think other minor changes are easier to do. I mean, if you just decide, I just don't want to play the homicidal maniac, revenge seeking, you know, bloodlust guy anymore, then I don't see that's as big of a problem. Maybe you would as a GM for some plot points, but you know what? People change. I mean, and they can change in an instant, and it's because of its emotions. I mean, today I'm in a good mood. Tomorrow I might be pissy because of whatever happened. And
today I'm a homicidal maniac.
And I'll be
tomorrow,
really dark all day tomorrow.
I am not.
You know, and that can be, and I think furthermore, that can be for your whole personality.
What happens when he finds his father's killer and shoots his head off?
Yeah.
Does it go back to being normal? Yeah. Or you know, has revenge defined him for so long?
Well, I think now he's screwed up.
But then you get into a situation where a character is just a one-trick pony. And if you created a character that's just a one-trick pony and has just that small amount of depth, then you created a wrong character. I mean, your character, he's got to have more to him than just that one thing. Yeah. Conan wanted revenge in the movie. He got his revenge. He didn't go away. He still continued. He still had other things he had to do. You can't have a guy who's just got one quirk to him and that's it. Always got to be more. It's just up to you to find out what that is.
I would say some of this is more like evolution of a character, really. I mean, that's one aspect you could look at it as. It's not just that you're sick of playing something. It's like we're saying here, you know, well, your character is maturing or evolving or something like
that. And I think it makes for great role-playing opportunities. Like John was saying, it's my character. Okay, I'm sick of this revenge thing. It's like, okay, guys, truth be told, I made Batman. And it's kind of lame. But the character is really interesting, so let's get rid of the revenge part of it. And, okay, well, talk with the GM. Make a deal with him and say, listen, can we get rid of this part? By having my character get his revenge, and we do a couple of games of confronting the thing.
You can have him open the newspaper and realize his nemesis tripped, and now he's dead. So what the hell is he going to do?
Right. I think that exploring the emptiness of revenge is an interest. I mean, I wouldn't want to do a whole campaign on this, but I think that that's an interesting thing for a character to do. It provides some interesting interactions and such.
As I mentioned before, I think due diligence on the front end is going to fix most of these. And as I was coming up with examples, including the one I gave here, and a couple I didn't, another example would be, let's say the character's just boring. You wrote a character you thought he'd be interesting, is actually boring. You need to add more to him, but what you add to him may or may not still fit within the group template. Okay, and this is that one.
I'm sorry, I can't relate to that. No one behind these mics except Chris makes boring characters.
That's true. But
you're absolutely correct. That's why I DM all the time.
Yeah.
Hide behind my screen like the coward I am.
That's right. With your terrible, boring characters and your Monty Hall campaigns.
That's right. And my power gaming adventures, and I do nothing but throw monsters at people. Here's the next thing to kill.
If you throw enough monsters at them, suddenly they won't realize that you don't actually have a plot.
If you throw enough, they'll die. And then they don't get to ask.
That's right. Look, another random encounter. Anyway, you were saying, Dan.
But let me give another example. In our Skies of Glass game, Pat, as we were developing the characters,
which we did use a group template on.
But as we were playing that Skies of Glass game, it was strongly implied that your sister had been the victim of a sex crime.
Yes.
Okay. I don't want to go into detail, but let's say that we had brought someone into the group, a new player, who had actually been the victim of a sex crime, and was still struggling to deal with that, or really during their hobby time did not want to be reminded of that. Now, in the game, you guys really didn't pursue that particular plot point too much detail, mostly because your character was kind of in denial about what was going on. And your sister also wasn't being totally honest with everyone.
Yeah.
But let's say that you guys had been chasing that. Now, obviously, because your character being a protective older brother is going to be a big deal to him. And now all of a sudden someone comes into the group, and for the sake of their enjoyment, we can't really deal with that anymore.
So make it disappear.
This is a good example because now you're adding a lot more complexity to this. It's not simply that I decide, you know what, I'm bored with this, or I don't necessarily want to have my sister having had this problem. Now you're talking about it's a new person, a new player to the group, and you don't want to offend them or make them uncomfortable. Yeah, I think you've got to change it, you know. Either change it or you play a different game completely. It's like, let's stop Skies of Glass and play something else.
It sounds to me like this is a really
that's a bigger issue. And we've kind of talked about this one before with this whole level of...
And in a case that extreme, you can probably just make a decision as a group to say, you know what, it never happened.
Right.
We're just going to drop that plot point like it didn't exist.
Yeah.
But I do think that in most cases, you can resolve this issue. As we keep saying, head it off with due diligence. If you end up in this situation, sometimes it's just because you misjudged things, but usually it's because you didn't think it through all the way.
Sure.
But I think there are two simple ways you can resolve this. One is, as we've talked about, if you don't like something, let it progress naturally. Communicate to the GM or the other players, I don't like this aspect of my character. This character is boring to me. You figure out how you can fix it. And everyone says, look, let's let two or three games pass. And in these two or three games, this, this, and this might happen. Or I'm going to give you some opportunities to organically change the way your character is. You're going to see some things or experience some things or do some things that will let you work that out. Or if your character is too boring, then I'm going to have a long lost brother pop up who's going to tell you all the things about your childhood that you'd been blocking out or something like that. And you can find some way organically in the game to fix it.
Yeah.
And right along with that is talk. I mean, it's one of the great points we come up with again and again and again. Don't flip out. Don't drop the character, but sit down and talk to everyone and say, look, this is my problem. How can we fix this without breaking the game, without breaking the group template, without forcing us to just toss all these characters out and start something completely different?
In related to that, how easy really is that to do? I love the theory, but I'm wondering if, you know, does that honesty and communication really exist? I mean, do you have that at your table where you can have that kind of thing? I mean, do you think that's a common trait for most tables to have?
You know what? I'm going to say yes, but... I think it is common, at least from the groups that I have been in and I have seen, that kind of communication could occur. Typically, the problem is with the person who has the discomfort to begin with. They don't express it. They just get more and more distant, more and more withdrawn, less and less interested in the game. They start doing things consciously or subconsciously to derail it. They don't stop. And I think this is a huge problem in a lot of groups. This was a problem in our group for years, and I think still is on and off, and this is something we've been working hard to change, is there's not enough pre-game or post-game discussion about the game itself. There's not enough metagame talk, and I don't mean that in the sense of our cheating metagame talk. I mean, like, is everyone having fun? Is this plot going in a direction you guys like? Is everyone okay with their characters? Is there something occurring here that's just frustrating everybody that the GM needs to change? And these kinds of conversations don't occur, I think, sometimes just because, I don't know, maybe we're just too chicken to bring it up. Maybe sometimes it's because we think, you know, to tell somebody else that I'm not having fun would hurt their feelings. And so I don't want to say that this character's boring or this character's annoying or the GM's plot's frustrating or whatever. And so these metagame conversations just don't occur often enough.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say, in thinking along these lines, I would say that you would have, well, you certainly, like you're saying, Dan, you've got issues with a well-established group, but I certainly think that, say, a newer group or, you know, younger players, less experienced players, or just a brand new group of players getting together would certainly have these issues to try to work through. So yeah, it just goes back to the things that we've talked about before. Open communication, you know, just try to get to know your group, this, that, and the other. So the group template, all these kind of things.
Do you guys ever think that there can be too much communication though? Do you think that you guys can, like, a group can discuss something to the point to where it just gets so chewed up that you're not really gaming anymore?
And in many games,
overanalyzation,
the metagame becomes the game. I mean, the social scene around playing becomes 90% of what the game actually is. Obviously, you've seen this too, Chris.
Well, I think that's just a general rule that's true with almost anything in life, really. I'm not meaning to expand the conversation, but you can talk too much about some things. There is that And I hate using this business buzz term, but there's that sweet spot where the issue's been talked about enough and we've established things enough, and you just leave it and just stop talking about it, because we all know, we all get it, we're all there. Yeah, so you can overtalk things, because then you do get into you overanalyze things. The more you talk about it, the more essentially you get yourself closer and closer to that, you know, to that picture, to that point where you can't see now the larger picture that you were talking about in the first place. And then you start to nitpick, and that's when things get that's the other end of the extreme, when things can get ruined that way.
I think that's why things like a group template and character surveys and things like that are so helpful in situations like these, is because it kind of keeps you on task. You can kind of say, okay, how do you guys feel about this? And everybody chimes in and you talk about it, you discuss it a little bit, and then there's always those other topics on the list. How do we get these people working together? Why are these people together? Do they get along? How do they not get along? And will this team work? Blah, blah, blah. Again, that's why that's why bureaucracy helps in this situation. It keeps you organized. It keeps you on task.
Exactly what you guys are describing is the reason why I do not watch the special features on DVDs.
I love the special features. You know, I don't have time to watch them.
I love the information they contain. There's usually some really, really neat stuff in there, but I find it ruins my movie watching experience. Because I start to think about it too much. I understand too much. They start pointing out the little bloopers they make. And so now when that scene comes up, I really love, all I can notice is the boom mic that's slightly visible in the upper left corner.
It takes away from the magic. It takes away a little bit of the magic for you, doesn't it?
I totally understand that. I don't want to sound like I'm some amateur director, because I'm not. I'm not interested in actually making a movie, but movie making interests me, so to speak. And so when I watch a movie, I'm kind of watching it on two levels. I'm watching the magic, you know, drawing you into the story and stuff. And I'm also thinking, huh, that's really cool. They use three cameras in this shot. They're using this kind of lighting. This is the kind of color correction they're using. This is what the directors is telling the actors. Wait a minute, this was an odd cut. What did they cut out here? How is the director piecing together the story to make it flow? And, like, I've seen some really interesting, like, bonus features and stuff. Like, on the movie 7, they have an entire featurette on there on color correcting and editing. And it is fascinating. It is like you write the movie, then you plan out the movie, then you shoot the movie, and then you tell the story again in post-production. You cut off. Anyway, that's a huge tangent, but I totally dig what you're saying, but I love movie making. I love the art and science behind it. And when I watch a movie, I watch how the movie is made.
You see, and I can see, and I'm with you, Chad. I can see both points. And I think that, because I agree with Dan, because sometimes I don't like to watch special features, but yet on the same side, because I work in a business where I do video editing and all that kind of stuff, and I do that mm-hmm. creating behind the scenes, I also do like enjoy watching them for the same reasons Chad has.
Yeah.
I think in game terms, though, if that, I would only prefer that the players get into the special features, quote-unquote, of my campaign after it's all done. If you want to revisit something that happened when you were third level, great, let's do it after all the campaign's done, when it just really doesn't matter because it's over. You know, as opposed to talking about it when you're still going through things and you're like seventh level. Even though it was a while ago, let's talk about it all when it's done, because I don't want to take away from that magic.
I agree with that point, but to kind of temper it too, I also want to say that you can't be too hard-ass about this. Everybody has questions, and everybody...
Absolutely.
You know, you need to talk about what's going on in a context that isn't in character with all the yay verilies and that sort of stuff, all the out-of-character talk. Of course, don't...
Certainly, with certain things, you know, saying like, oh yeah, this guy totally would have done this if you would have asked him to do that. And I agree with that. I think that's fine to do that, you know, because it's a minor quibble.
You got to make your d***ing fart jokes, too. So, you know,
it wouldn't
be a role-play game without him.
No, it wouldn't be a podcast without him.
We have a sister topic to this, but we're coming up pretty close to time, and I don't want to rush through this one, and so we'll just save it for 151.
So this was 150. This was the 10th episode. Did we do anything special?
Yeah, John's here.
Oh, yeah, woo-hoo! That's right.
Yay!
I also have to do a retraction, too.
Oh, what's that?
From not the last episode, but the episode before that would be 148.
Okay.
The one that's out now.
That'd be, well, 140, okay, 149 hasn't dropped yet, so yes, it'd be 148.
So 148, yeah, somebody pointed out that we were talking about GM cheating, And apparently I said something to the effect of power gaming min-maxers are cheaters. I don't believe that. That I must have been talking too fast and that kind of came out. Yeah, so I totally retract that. Somebody on the forum said that.
I remember that.
I don't remember the yeah. It seemed like when you say it just that, it sounds really bad, but I don't even remember the context of what I
said. I'm saying that when the GM does it, it's not illegal.
That's right. I don't think, you know, hey, power gamers, min-maxers, not cheating, totally fun. Have your fun with that. Not my kind of game, but yeah, so, totally cool with it. Okay. So that was my official retraction.
All right, so in 151, we will be back for the sister topic to this. And until then, you guys have good games, and we will catch you next time.
See you
later
soon.
Later.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.